Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James. LeBron James with the rejection.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast on Leverage the Chat. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. Carter Rodriguez is not in today, so I'm bringing back the man, the myth, the legend, back by popular demand, and our most frequent recurring guest, Ryan Morton. Mort, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I'm a lot better than I would have been if the Cavs blew that game against Brooklyn, because I don't think I could take two losses in one year to them, especially with how damn tight that tanking race is. Like, the Nets won only one game in all of February, and they didn't move up at all in the lotto odds.
Well, I was actually cheering for the Cavs to lose that game at one point, just because I'm here. Like, it doesn't matter where they are. They're going to win the lottery. You know, they might win the lottery with the 10th pick. They might win with the 9th. They might win with the 11th. I don't really care. So where they are doesn't really matter to me. But seeing people self-immolate, like, at every touch, especially with the way the Nets pick would play out, as well as the Cavs losing to the Nets, it would have provided me, you know, it would have provided me more laughter than a night of looking at Isaiah Thomas statistics. But a win is fine, too. And, the Mavericks also won a game. So it's not the worst thing in the world. They're still, like I said, they're going to win. So I guess it doesn't really matter. But they're currently winning the lottery from what, like the 8th position or the 7th position. It's fine.
I mean, they got the karma gods going towards them winning the lottery, because as Boston fans are jumping to point out, the Nets have no reason to tank, even though they only won one game in all of February. Plus, you got Money Dan coming in. He's going to come in with that predatory loans money. And he's gonna grease Adam Silver's pockets.
Exactly. You know, you got LeBron. You need to keep the legacy alive. Oh, exactly. All the frozen envelopes are lining up, and boom, mark it down. They might even let it get to 14th just to make it more absurd when they win the lottery with the pick. But it'll happen.
You touched on something that I think we need to talk about, and that's just how unreasonable Cavs Twitter has been lately. And this isn't a new phenomenon, and it's not something I'm completely innocent from. I do kind of go through my swings, but I feel like Chops has had too much influence on Cavs Twitter. Because everyone is like, from play to play, they go from loving players to absolutely despising them. And like, to see the mood swings within a game, I get that it's frustrating, and I get that the immediate return was awesome with those wins over Boston and OKC. But this is still a work in progress. This is still a team that's missing its second best player, and it's going to take some time for these guys to learn how to play with one another. The All-Star break clearly didn't do them a lot of favors. They forgot the plays and things that they had worked on from before the break. And I there's going to be hiccups along the way, and there just seems to be so little tolerance for those hiccups at this point.
That's a nice try getting me to come on here and hate on Chops, but I will not do it.
I thought I'd throw the bait out there. You can do with it as you please, but go for it.
What I will say is that people are a bit on edge, and my take is this: you know, they still have the team fits a whole hell of a lot better. They still have some issues and some non-traditional pieces. So, you know, everyone's in a rush to start Larry Nance and Rodney Hood, and I don't necessarily disagree with it. I think those are two of your five best players right now, probably. Okay. However, you know, that would give you three brand new people, and currently, you know, you're starting Tristan Thompson, you're starting Jetty Osman, LeBron James, and J.R. Smith. And if Tristan and J.R. have a bad game, or if Jetty has a bad game, you know, you still have four guys that know what they're supposed to be doing and a new guy they're working in. And I think, you know, when you add three brand new people to that mix, and then your bench one of the reasons that the bench is able to overcome that, you know, that newness and unfamiliarity is because it's got a lot of firepower. That's my interpretation or my opinion on it. So, you know, when you're going up against other team starters, I don't think having three brand new pieces and then, I mean, who else would you have? JR and LeBron, which is fine. But if JR's having a bad game, you know, if JR's not playing, Oh, come on. He had like a 5-6 game stretch. So the last two have been bad after he was really good for a while. Come on.
Like he had some shots, but like he's in his own head right now. Like he's not hitting shots. He's not playing defense. The effort isn't there. Like out of the guys in the lineup, I want to see less of JR and I want to see less of Jeff Green. And I know how good Jeff Green's been. But
not lately, though.
No, not lately. But I mean, overall in the season, I understand why people have some fond feelings towards him. And I love the Jeff Green experience while it lasted. But I think a big part of why they lost that Spurs game was you had Jeff Green, who was playing like 30 minutes where Larry Nance was playing 15. And
here's the problem. And the other thing with starting Larry Nance, he's averaging like 7 fouls per 36 minutes. And you can't, like, if you start him, so against the, yeah, that was last game, he picked up 2 fouls in 4 minutes.
Yeah, but so, Mike Zavago, no, oh my God, I butchered his name. Sorry, Mike. But he brought up a good point. Like, we're talking about a really small sample size here. And, like, over the last 3 games that the Cavs have played, they've been called for, like, just an absurd amount of fouls. And I'm not someone that likes to get on the refs a whole lot, but these games have been incredibly poorly officiated. And, like, I can remember a few of those Nance fouls, blocks and offensive fouls that were just absurd. Like, it made no sense that it was being called on him. And I just don't think that that's something you can extrapolate for the long term. Like, he hasn't had foul issues in the past, and I know he's playing more of his minutes at center than he's used to. But at the same time, like, I just don't think he's a player that's prone to a lot of fouls. And, Jeff Green shouldn't be your crunch time closing center. Like, I understand why people want to move to Nance as the starting center. And I think that that's something that likely will happen probably by playoffs. But as long as he's playing starter's minutes and he's getting that 25, 30 minutes a game, my preference is have him close. Like, that's actually a reason why you would continue starting Tristan is, if he is having this foul trouble, you at least want him in there at the fourth quarter. So Tristan's absorbing some of those minutes earlier on, similar to how Mozgov did a few years ago.
Well, that would be my other trepidation as well to play, you know, the perk of a Larry Nance or a Tristan Thompson prior to the finals last year, where he had been stellar all the way up until then, is the athleticism, switchability, and speed that you gain at the position. And I think part of the problem that you ran into with Tristan Thompson is you never had, all last year, you never had anyone to soak up the minutes. Mozgov was in L.A., Channing, he was all right, but he couldn't play against every team, and he couldn't really play extended minutes.
Right, and he's not helping your defense, right?
Right. Kevin got hurt, and so, you know, I mean, Tristan had to – he didn't have to play 300-some games, but I would imagine that were it not for a streak, he would have sat some of those. Or were it not for, you know, just having nobody else – I mean, there are games where they had nobody else to play. And so then you've got an undersized player. Anderson Varejao would be another great example. You've got an undersized player that you're wearing down, and the shelf life on undersized players is shorter than it is for, you know, a guy like Joel Embiid, for example, that's massive, or Shaquille O'Neal, that was massive. Like, you know, when you're oversized for your position, you can lose a bit and not hurt as much. Tristan looks like he's lost half a step. Maybe a step, and it makes him look useless at times.
Yeah,
and
especially in other second games, nights of back to back. Like that game Now I'm drawing a blank. But the second game there before the Spurs, was it the Hawks?
It was the they started. No, the Hawks was the first.
Hawks was the first, and then it was.
Yes, Hawks, Celtics, Thunder, Wizards.
Anyways, the bottom line is Tristan looked like dog shit in that game. And if you look, it's hilarious on Basketball Reference on how he performs with no rest versus some rest. Like, his effectiveness is just it night and day. The guy can't play back-to-backs, and I think you have to... Like, those would be games, and there's only one left for the rest of the season, so this conversation's a little redundant. But those would be games where, okay, maybe you lean on Jeff Green a little more at center in those games. But yeah, it's clear he's still working through some stuff with his knee. I don't know if he's ever going to come all the way back to the player he was before these injuries. But
I mean, he said he's not.
No, so. Yeah. He's logged a lot of minutes. Like, Larry Nance isn't that much younger, but when you look at the difference in total minutes that they've played, it's ridiculous, and maybe he did some permanent damage to himself last season playing through those injuries for the second half of the season and playoffs. But yeah, as we said, he's not going to be the same player, but hopefully as you move into the playoffs where you are getting more rest, he can be effective in short bursts. And I think ultimately Larry Nance is just someone that's dynamic enough to be that closing center for them.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, he's played great, and the idea is to integrate him in a way that will have him as fresh as possible for the playoffs. Like, who cares about the regular season, man? You know, I know that it's fashionable, I guess, right now. I don't really give a crap where they end up. You know, they're going to have LeBron. They're going to have Kevin back. They're going to have Larry Nance. Rodney Hood looks like he has a lot of utility. You never really know what you're going to get out of JR, but there's going to be JR games in the playoffs. There always are.
Right.
And
I think what we hope for is that Tyronn Lue starts to get a bit of a shorter leash for some of these guys. Like, I think that's been part of the problem. And I know one of the things people call for in game is, well, why aren't they changing the rotation a whole lot here? And like, when a team practices, they're practicing for a certain rotation. There's certain players that they've been practicing with, and you're just not going to see those massive shifts in game. I think going from the Spurs game to the Brooklyn game, all of a sudden people are like, oh, well, the rotations look a whole lot better. Well, yeah, they probably went through shoot around it, and they played with different units, and like, Lou is making some adjustments. Like, especially when you're talking about guys that haven't played a whole lot together, you're going to allow them to go through 2-3 minute stretches of bad play to see, hey, does this turn around in minutes 4 and 5? And like, everyone just expects it to be like, nope, this didn't work. We're changing it up. Especially with a team like the Cavs that has visions for June, and that's the whole focus of the franchise, you're going to blow a game or two in the regular season, and it's frustrating, but those are adjustments that are made between games.
Coaching critiques are the worst part of everything we do. And I mean, it is. It's terrible. And it's something I was thinking about and something I noticed. Do you see beat guys, like people on the beat constantly? Do you see them making coaching critiques as much, people that are closest to the franchise?
You see some that cover the team that come
be
from,
it the Cavs
no that that
or,
come
or
from,
any team
that no it, when the ones you see are guys that came from, let's say, a different industry, like they were, let's say, covering a political beat or something like that. See that around the league. Those guys that don't really understand basketball, like, they'll have the same knee-jerk reactions that fans will have.
And that's not necessarily the angle I'm going for.
No, like, I'm
we
going
have
for
no
it.
Idea. Okay, well, that's fine. I just want to separate myself, and I'm not agreeing or disagreeing with your take. And I would say that people that have come from political backgrounds have improved greatly on the certain beats that they've worked.
I'm actually not talking about someone specifically.
Oh, okay. Well, I thought you were. And,
no, whatever. I'm not. I had a couple writers in mind, not that cover the Cavs, but yeah. So I'm not talking about any of the Cavs beat guys. But yes, continue.
So coaching is kind of a catch-all for everything we can't quantify, right? Like, if we have an opinion of players and we think they're supposed to be terrible and they do even a little bit better, you know, immediately, bam, the coach is on a pedestal. It's not about how the players are interacting and how they might get along, or maybe someone's having a hot season, boom, coach, pedestal. And if we think the players are a lot better than, or should be a lot better than what their outcome is, coach, bad. And there could be validity to that, but I think in a lot of times we're just, you know, putting stuff to it. I saw, and I can't get it out of my head, I've just been grinding on it, and it's not someone that is known for bad takes, so I will allow them this one terrible take. But one of the worst tweets I've ever seen was, man, what a testament. What a testament to Brad Stevens and the culture of the Celtics that Ty Lue and the Cavs, you know, they couldn't get Isaiah Thomas to work. And hip injury or not, it really says a lot about their culture.
Shout out to my countryman, Josh Eberle.
Like I said, not known for bad takes. I wasn't going to put a name on it because, you know, in general, not an issue we run into. But holy crap, if that isn't the worst take I've ever encountered, and it perfectly encapsulates what I'm talking about.
Boston wanted to get Isaiah out of there. Like,
step one.
Their whole plan was sell high on Isaiah. Let's showcase him as much as humanly possible.
Well, and I mean, he had a good year, and Brad Stevens is a good coach, but it meets, like, you know, step one, I need to have a take. Step two, I don't like this particular coach. Step three, I do like this particular player. He should be playing better. Step four, boom, fire the hot take cannon. And
man, Isaiah's got his powers back since he went to L.A.
Oh, yeah, he's up to, like, what, 39% shooting, and they only give up 120-something points when he's on the floor. He's great. Back up the Brinks truck.
I do enjoy Lakers fans, how they've moved on, because every young player that plays for the Lakers, and this isn't a unique thing to Lakers fans, so I shouldn't just blame them entirely for this, but every young player that they have, it's, okay, this guy's the sleeper of the century. They're all franchise player. Josh Hart, he's the next Damian Lillard. And like, they've completely minimized Clarkson and Nance now that they aren't on their team, and the impact that Nance in particular had on their defense. And like, their defense, like, swapping Nance for Isaiah Thomas is about as brutal as it gets. And the amount of points that they've given up since that trade is just comical.
Even Clark, you know, Clarkson's defended a little better, but I mean, back to the, because I'm still grinding on this, you know, I don't know, it just bothers me. So getting to what you were talking about, where it's, you know, why is this lineup still in the game? Why is this happening? Well, you know, you're not trying to win a game in February. Like, it's, you know, you can't sacrifice May and June to win a game in February. And when guys bring up some, and the numbers are terrible, you know, there's no lack of validity in saying, hey, this has been bad, but you have to try to build guys that are struggling up, and you have to know your locker room, and you can't play it like 2K. So if J.R. Smith, if you're going to bench him and lose him and, you know, make it impossible to have him back. He's not going to bounce back. You bench him, and this is a hypothetical, but you bench him and he's gone. You can't do that. And if you're trying to build a rotation for June, you know, maybe you keep that intact while you kind of shuttle guys in and out of your starting lineup around that, a Jetty Osman, you know, a Tristan Thompson even. Maybe when Kevin Love gets back, Tristan's the one that's out of the rotation. Like, who knows?
Right.
But you have to look at this with a long view, and you can't tweak a rotation and a lineup from game to game to game, and you can't put someone in and, you know, oh man, they've missed four shots in a row, it's time to sit him right back down and get, you know, this guy in. And the Cavs, as much as they've improved their fit, they still have a lot of weirdly working parts. I mean, you never know what you're going to get from JR. You don't really know what you're going to get from Tristan. You don't necessarily know what you're going to get from Jordan Clarkson. He's been far more good than he has been bad. But historically, you know, he's been kind of a grab bag player.
Right.
And we're seeing that a little bit lately. Like, his final box score looks good, but like every shift is a different story with him.
Yeah, and George Hill even. George Hill's been, you know, up and down. Last night was probably the first good game offensively that he's played. And at home, they've been missing a ridiculous amount of shots. They're fouling like crazy. And I don't know. I feel like if a different coach had a bench that was playing really well, comprised of new guys like this, that instead of, oh, man, oh, what is going on here? You know, it'd be this, well, we like Popovich and this, all these new guys are on this bench. It's playing great. What a genius. Because we don't know what the hell we're talking about. We're not near the team. We don't know how these guys interact in the locker room. You know, we have no idea what the hell we're talking about. We see players playing well or playing poorly. We read five quotes on Twitter and we go, well, this coach has lost the locker room, man. These guys, they're going nuts. It's the worst. It really drives me crazy. And
especially basketball. You're right. I think you've made a lot of really good points here. And it's a game of runs, and to break, like, I see people and they're using like net rating for this 5 minute sample in one game. And I'm like, that's not the intention of that. And if you're going to put every single segment of a game under a microscope and judge coaches by that, you're doing it wrong. You're going to have a bad time.
Yeah, it's, man, I don't know. I've tried to refrain from coaching takes other than I know Ty's a good coach because he spectacularly coached the team to a goddamn finals win. You know, we know Brad Stevens is a good coach. His teams are always successful. We know, you know, there's some gulfs in between good, and I don't necessarily know that there's a lot of bad coaches out there. You know, well, maybe Keith Smart. But, I mean, even the guys that everyone bags on, they're still very successful. Like, I hate talking about coaching because we don't know what the hell we're talking about. It bothers the hell out of me.
And we also assign everything to the head coach. And that's the funny thing. Like, there's so many coordinators. There's so many assistants that are heavily involved. Some teams have assistant coaches that call the plays, some that run the defense. One of my favorite things is when people... And we've seen this a little bit this year. People will go back to David Blatt and say he was the better coach. The Cavs made a mistake firing him for Tyronn Lue, even though they won a goddamn title months later. And they'll point.
And the players clearly hated Blatt.
They clearly hated him. And the evidence for it was, oh, look how the defense dropped off after. I'm like, David Blatt didn't coach any of the defense. Tyronn Lue
coached the defense.
He coached the defense, and then when he was promoted a head coach, they hired a coordinator. And then I think they changed it back come playoffs, and the defense improved, and they won a title. Like, yeah, we just have
Mike Longobardi handles the defense. And then, yeah, Ty did it in the playoffs. But even that, and that's
but to your point, we have absolutely no idea what we're talking about half the time. Like, it's uninformed. We can everybody sees it, and it's crystal clear when you're watching it on a game, and I'm sure it's clear when Ty Lue goes back and watches film. And by the way, I don't think Lue has done a great job this year. I think it hasn't, like, I just think he's had a few bad games, just as players have bad games. But it's also been a really tough situation when so many of the players that were brought in weren't what you hoped them to be. And I don't think that's all on him by any stretch of the imagination. Like, Isaiah Thomas.
He brought in Derrick Rose. He was the one that wanted Derrick Rose. So, you know, you have to put that on him, and that's fine. Like, that's one where he said, hey, I wanted Derrick Rose. And Derrick Rose was not good. And he tried to shoehorn Derrick Rose in the lineups. But even when you look at that, like, you've got Isaiah Thomas, you're trying to trade him, or you're trying to have him be good at some point. You've got to play him. You've got Derrick Rose. You wanted Derrick Rose on the team. You promised Derrick Rose he would play. You got to play him. You got Jeff Green. Jeff Green's playing well. Well, you got to play him. You got Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver can shoot. You got to play him. Like, they had all these ill-fitting guys that you had to play for one reason or another. You had to play Jay Crowder. You had to play IT. And boom, okay, now they're all gone. So now you got to figure out how all these other guys fit together. And the guys that were fine before are now falling apart. Like, you know, Jeff Green. You could always count on Jeff Green, which is still weird to say. Now,
I don't think you can say it anymore.
Now he's been really bad, and LeBron is – well, he's LeBron. He's fine. Kevin Love is out. Can't count on him. You know, Kyle Korver has been missing shots. You can't count on Kyle Korver's jumper right now, which is crazy. And George Hill hasn't been good. So, like, what are the options? Like, everyone loves to say the Cavs have no good defensive players, which is pretty true. And then they'll look at the at the ratings and be like, oh, man, Ty Lue can't coach defense. Well, you told me these guys were terrible defensive players. Like, I don't know. And well, that's not incorrect.
It's always
they have
easier.
A lot of bad defense, but.
Yeah. And as I said, I don't think Lue has done a great job this year. But it's always easier for people to point at a coach and say that's the reason that the team sucks, rather than saying, okay, maybe we don't have the personnel to do this, or maybe these players aren't as good as I hoped that they were. So it's just an easy scapegoat because it is something that it's hard to quantify, and it's the knee-jerk reaction for a lot of people.
Why don't they run more pick and roll with LeBron as the screener? Well, every playoffs, they run a mountain of pick and roll with LeBron as the screener. So maybe they know that they have that in their back pocket and they're trying to work on something else. Like, all of these arguments that we have all season, we never have them in the playoffs. So am I concerned? No, not a bit. You're just being annoying. Please stop. Leave me alone about Ty Lue.
Do we want to move on to
a
future Cavaliers player that you absolutely hate and his team that is being led by Tomas Staturaski right now? And are right on the Cavs' heels, John Wall. Do you have John Wall?
He's not playing for the Cavs.
Do you have John Wall?
He is not. John Wall has 50-year-old knees on a $40 million a year contract. He's not playing for the Cavs. The worst idea, and it's no discredit to John Wall. I mean, you get hurt, but trading a potential top pick, whatever it may be, if it's top seven in this draft, come on, man. Like, that salary is going to destroy your franchise. The designated player extension, or whatever the hell the specific term for it is, is one of the dumbest ideas in practice. It sounded great, but in practicality has been just absolutely horrid. You know, $200 million contract for John Wall as he's turning 30 and he had another knee surgery. Like, man, that thing's going to be a Gilbert Arenas-level albatross. And, well, the Magic are still the Magic, so there might be a way out of it. But
could you imagine if they inherited John Wall after the Arenas experiment? Part of me wants Wall, one, because he is fun when he is healthy, and two, I just want to see how you react to it.
I can't imagine, yeah. That one would send me over the edge. That would – I mean, he's going to age terribly. Like, he's got messed up knees.
Listen, man, take it easy on us with bad knees, okay?
I have knee issues too. That's what – like, he's going to age so bad. I feel like – and maybe I'm wrong, and one of those corny accounts that points out incorrect takes by the takesman will – have fun with this clip one day.
Yeah.
But
gas bag listens. Away, man. Go for it.
Nobody listens to this crap. What am I talking about?
That is accurate. There are dozens there are dozens of listeners that are gonna come after you.
I'm just messing with you. But yeah, I mean, I feel like he's gonna age like absolutely terribly. And by the time he's 32, I mean, he can't shoot. Like, what, when he starts to lose speed, how bad is it going to be? And, you know, if he was making half of what he's making or a third of what he's making, that'd be great. And that'd be fun. And that'd sell tickets. But trading for him on a supermax is maybe the worst idea that any team could possibly have with A, how the Wizards have played without him. And I think you're crazy if you say the Wizards aren't better without John Wall, because literally by every number, they've been better without John Wall. Now, maybe their ceiling isn't as high without John Wall, but they've definitely been better.
I'm just going to cycle through like different things that have popped up and just get you reacting to it. What did you think of the Philly sports talk host that said that LeBron was checking out Philadelphia private schools over the All-Star break?
I think he's a Philly sports talk host. I don't have to follow that up. I don't. Which one was it?
I'm not sure how to pronounce the name, and I don't want to be disrespectful, but A-L-A-A is the first name, and then A-B-D-E-L-N-A-B-Y.
Oh, right.
Abandambly.
Okay. Used to play for the Portland Trail Blazers.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah.
I always forget that you're old and washed.
I also have Google, but I mean, this was in 1990, man. I was three.
I was a year away from being born. So there you go.
I have no idea what his sourcing would be on LeBron checking out private schools in Philadelphia.
And the funny thing is, one, that could also be true, but that could also be part of LeBron, owning a school, checking out other schools. Maybe it's an expansion thing. Maybe he's checking out other good schools.
Or he's just working out. Like, that's what he was doing in L.A., and that's what he does at a lot of places. You just go, I mean, the Cavs use high school and college gyms all the time. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. Now, the Cavs weren't in Philadelphia. I don't know why the hell he'd be in Philadelphia. But I also, can you see? I don't know. I guess maybe LeBron could play in Philadelphia. That'd be dumb, but I guess it's possible. I don't.
Yeah, LeBron really loves young players, and I'm sure he's going to count on Joel Embiid staying healthy. You talked about how you didn't want to trade the Brooklyn pick. Like, do you still think it's going to land fairly high, or are you starting to think, okay, it's probably going to be about in that 6-8 range?
6-8 would be dope, dude. There's like eight. Great players in this draft, and maybe more. I mean, there's always, a Danny Granger, a Kawhi Leonard, Devin Booker. You know, there's always someone after the initial X. Now whatever, however many people you think there are, there's going to be someone in the next few.
That's a great response, Ryan. I really appreciate it. Answer the question. Where do you think it's landing?
I think it's landing one, like I've been saying. It doesn't matter. Doesn't matter where they are, they're winning the lottery. However, anywhere in that top spot is fine. I don't think I would enjoy a point guard. No offense to Trae Young or Colin Sexton. I don't take point guards early. I think the thing that's hardest to find is versatile wings. And, you know, that's where they need to be looking. However, if they land 7th or 8th and they take a point guard and he's fun and exciting, I'd be cool with that. I mean, you're a good team and you're going to add a top 10 talent. And the only reason you shouldn't be doing that is if you're getting a guy like Paul George.
I was going to ask, what type of guys would you trade the pick for?
Paul George, Jimmy Butler, not DeMarcus Cousins anymore. I don't know that I would have traded for him before because I don't necessarily trust DeMarcus Cousins. But I wouldn't have been completely upset about it because I freaking love watching him play basketball. But personal rule, don't trust anybody coming off an Achilles injury. I wouldn't go against that for a single player. So unfortunately, he is out on my list of to-dos. But yeah, I mean, it'd have to be someone in that, you know, that Paul George tier of immediate amazing player that fits well with LeBron. And there just aren't a lot of those guys out there. I trade it for Westbrook because I'd see you melt down on a daily basis, and that would be amazing for me. But
that triggered me, man. You might have to run the rest of this podcast because I'm not going to bounce back from that.
Imagine Russ and LeBron together, scowling, pointing, fighting for triple doubles.
Neither of them play any defense.
It'd be so good. So yeah, it was fun when you're doing it with John Wall. It's not so fun now, huh, mother?
Well, Walt can actually help a team. I love someone jumped in my mentions the other day. They're like, "Man, you really hate Westbrook." I'm like, "Yes, like,
yeah.
You're not bringing up news to me."
And he's so dope. You're crazy. Yeah,
that's why I hate him, is because I had such high hopes for Westbrook, and he was so much fun, and I was such a big fan. But then he just like never progressed, and he averaged
like 30, 11, and 11.
That's great, but you're not winning with him because he's going to play the same way no matter who he's with, and ultimately in the playoffs, when you go against a Houston, a Golden State, or a San Antonio, he's going to beat himself, and that's what those teams rely on.
Let me put you on to 15 years of an unbeaten theory. Blame Melo. Blame Melo.
If it wasn't for Russ, they would have made the finals in 2016. If they had Damian Lillard, Kyrie, John Wall, any of those like tier two point guards, they would have made the finals.
Well, that's fine because I was perfectly happy to see a renowned choker in the finals.
I mean, that was glorious. Yes. I'm not changing anything about the 2016 finals.
I wouldn't have trusted Kevin Love to guard any of those upper tier point guards, but I would trust him against a collaborative talent like Steph Curry.
Are you excited for Kevin Love second option, no qualifiers? Like, I'm happy for him because he deserves this. I love
Kevin Love. Kevin Love's my favorite basketball player. I love watching Kevin Love. And I am fueled by people who don't like things. So currently, you know, I'm big on Kevin Love, much as I was on Iman Shumpert. Give me Kevin Love. Give me Tristan Thompson. Give me J.R. Smith. Give me Ty Lue. If you don't like him, I like him. I just need to like these guys that don't get liked enough. And Kevin Love is still greatly underappreciated.
I still think they need to make a statue of him outside of the queue and just have it be him with the WWE belt slung over his shoulder and a cigar in his mouth, sunglasses. I love this no fucks given version of Kevin Love we're getting. Like, he is being so petty in the media and like just calling people out. And man, just let it fly.
Well, and those jokes are like, I don't know how Kevin Love fits in. How do you know how Kevin Love fits in? I have no idea what these – I mean, last year they were all hanging out at his house drinking wine, you know, and in every Instagram. And we're literally basing our takes off of Instagram and Twitter. There's 24 hours in a day, and we're the morons looking at a tweet of a picture and going, man, those guys really don't like Kevin Love, huh?
And also, you – like – if you look at the stories from the locker room fight, like Jason Lloyd and all these other really reputable reporters that don't say shit if they don't have good sources on it, they're talking about how it was Isaiah Thomas and Dwayne Wade going against Love, and LeBron's backing up Kevin Love. He's going against Dwayne Wade. And like you can tell, like LeBron and Love, they've obviously gone through a lot of shit, and those dudes get along now. And
yeah.
I'm so interested to see what this team looks like, because I think the supporting cast really sets up well for having those two kind of running the show. And the way that Love played, even against Golden State this year, like he was really productive against them. I think that this team is set up to really support him and cover for him as a high usage big. And I'm really looking forward to like those George Hill, Rodney Hood, LeBron, Love, and Nance lineups. Like I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
And that was that. Yeah, that was where I was going. And I mean, you could have Clarkson and Hill as well.
Right, or you can interchange some of them.
Or you put Clarkson at point and you just have a massive lineup. But and that's really the only thing they're missing right now. And the same reason that Love and Tristan worked so well is you have to have a big on Kevin because he's destroyed. It's why they beat the Pistons. It's why they beat the Celtics so badly. You know, if you have that large three playing power forward, he's going to flam. He's going to just destroy you. And
they're going to mess some teams up on the boards. Like
if you combine that with the verticality that Nance has, which is what Tristan is also missing this year. You know, he has gravity just because of that vertical ability to take the top off of defense. And you have to account for that. And you have to account for, you know, a dude that can shoot 40% from 3-point line and also destroy whatever small player you try to switch on to him. And then you have guys like George Hill and Rodney Hood and LeBron. And I think it will be really successful, you know, when they bring that back. And hopefully it will push, no offense to him, he's played great so far this year until the last few weeks. Jeff Green, mostly out of the lineup. Kyle Korver probably has to go. When you're trimming down to 7 or 8 guys, he just, you know, and I think he plays pretty well. But at the end of the day, I mean, you're 37, man. You know, you're a spot player right now, and there's nothing wrong with that because it's really hard to be as good as he is at 37.
Yeah,
I wasn't even that good at 16. And
don't sell yourself short.
And maybe Tristan falls all the way out of the lineup, you know, and it's possible. Who knows? God, how bad would the takes be? Tristan, they can't play him.
So no, Ryan, the way you root for a team is you can only pick one guy at every position, and that's the one that's good, and the other one's bad. And it's bad to have two centers that are playing well.
So when they sit him, like everyone wants them to do, you know what's going to happen. Oh my God, they're playing. They're paying $16.4 million, and they won't even play him? Like, yeah, man, they deferred like $60 million worth of salary to win one title. And that's perfectly okay. It was amazing. It was the best title anybody's ever won. It's fine. Every contract is justified, except maybe JR, because he held out after the title. Makes it a little different.
Yeah, but that one's a wee bit rough.
He was just a hero of your championship parade. Like, what are you going to do? Hey, man, sorry, kick rocks.
Meh. Yeah. And there was no option to replace him. And God damn it, Kobe Altman, speaking of no option and no way to like add depth, this team, holy shit, it's so fun to have all these young guys. And I remember, I forget what bar because we were drinking, but you and I were sitting there and you're just like, I just want some fucking athletes on the Cavs. And we finally got that. Like Jordan Clarkson, hey. God, he moved fast. Larry Nance jumps out of the gym. Rodney Hood, I want to have more minutes and a little bit bigger of a role because that guy, he's a bucket getter. He's been fitting in really well with this team.
And I think that's another reason that maybe Kyle has to go. Just and maybe not permanently, but maybe he just needs to sit down. Like, you know, when Kevin gets back, he sits down.
At least cut back JR's minutes. Like, I think Hood should start over him, but yeah, at the very least, cut back on JR's minutes.
Because that's another person. Like, you got to find shots for Kyle, and you got to find Jordan Clarkson is not going to not take shots. You know, Jordan Clarkson has maybe 700 options on the flow chart of whether he's going to pass or shoot, and only 3 of the answers are that he's going to pass the ball. And there's nothing wrong with that. He wants to shoot and gets buckets. It just is who he is. So Jordan Clarkson's going to shoot, and you got to get obviously LeBron, Kevin Love, Rodney Hood needs shots. J.R. Smith, yeah, if he's not getting his, he kind of checks out. So he's someone else that you might have to, you know, depart from the lineup.
Hang on, I got to cut you off. Yes, this is great. So Slam Oh, this happened 7 hours ago. I missed it. Slam Magazine tweeted out a graphic, Rookie of the Year, and they got Ben Simmons, Donovan Mitchell, Lauri Markkanen, Kyle Kuzma. Is that Fox? My God. And Dennis Smith Jr. And they don't have Jason Tatum. I'm going to dive into these mentions. That is just amazing.
Well, out of sight, out of mind, man. When's the last? I mean, Tatum was great at the beginning of the year. Has he even played in the last 2 months? That's a joke. Holy crap! Tiki Torch Twitter. That was a joke. Stand down.
I actually really like Tatum, and I'm comfortable saying that I was wrong on him. But yeah, I mean,
maybe you can't say if you're wrong yet, man. It's year one. I mean, come on.
I thought he was the player out of the top five that had the highest bust potential, and I'm comfortable saying he's not that. I'm not with he's going to be a 15-time All-Star, but he's clearly a good player.
I'm old enough to remember when Ike Diagu was playing so well in his first year that he would not be traded for. God, I don't remember who the hell he wouldn't be traded for, but. Year one, I mean, obviously he's been really, really great, and I can't see any way he would be a bad player, but you never know. I mean, we could be 2 years down the line going, man, what the hell happened to him?
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Tyreke Evans. Although
he worked his way back, though.
Yeah, he worked his way back. I like Greek. I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up. A little bit of Celtic slander at the end. I think we touched on a lot of things that needed to be talked about because we just got to enjoy this ride a little bit more. And so much of the season has just been a shit show. And I think that's why there is some animosity towards the team when things aren't going well. But they're ahead of schedule. Like, there was going to be an adjustment period after these trades. And I think that they're performing better than most would have expected. And at least they've won those games, those big matchups against Boston and OKC. The Spurs, I mean, yes, it was a frustrating game, but that's also what the Spurs do. They will make you beat yourself on the third game in four nights. Like, they're just really well coached and disciplined. Anything you want to add at the end here, Ryan?
You kind of touched on it. We just need to enjoy every minute that Isaiah Thomas is not playing basketball for the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I think if we focus on that, and if we do that, your third eye is always wide open.
Stay woke, my friends. So thanks, Ryan. Thanks for filling for Carter, that coward not coming on the podcast. So much shame for him. But and thanks to our listeners. Remember, subscribe, you guys. Leave a rating, leave a review, put 5 stars on iTunes. It's the best way to help the show grow. So thanks again, guys, and until next time, go Cavs.